From KCRW, this is Greater LA. I'm Steve Chiotakis with a show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Making a livable wage means making money to afford to live. At a home or at an apartment, a condo perhaps. Not inside a car. Not at a shelter. Not under the 405.
All we want is a few fundamental things. Good wages. Benefits, keep our roof over our head and food on our tables and our families safe.
That's L.A. County Federation of Labor President Yvonne Wheeler rallying the crowd at a tenant worker solidarity march in downtown L.A. this past weekend. Over the past few months, thousands of L.A. workers have gone on strike to demand better working conditions and, yes, higher wages. And even though the housing and labor movements in L.A. are often talked about separately, they certainly do have a lot in common, perhaps even a drive now to join forces more often. Yvonne Wheeler is here with us from the L.A. Federation of Labor. We also have tenant advocate Miracle McKinney from the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment, and Peter Dreyer, a politics professor from Occidental College. All three with us right now. Yvonne, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Miracle, thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
And Peter Dreyer.
Thank you.
Yvonne, I'm going to start with you if you want to talk a little bit about that rally that happened over the weekend and what the goal of the rally was.
Well, the goal of the rally was, I guess, to shed light on the homeless and the tenants that are being evicted right now. And this is where we are so aligned with one another. So what affects one affects all. And what we've seen thus far is that we're in a homeless pandemic where working people are collecting paychecks, Steve, but they still can't afford to pay the rent, let alone live in the city where they work. And so when we see the inequality where companies are making record profits, but the workers who make the industries thrive continue to get priced out, when we see that these tenants are living in deplorable conditions, we know that we have to align with one another and fight this fight together. And that's why labor was there, because we are the community. We're not separate and apart.
Miracle, over the past several decades, you know, the cost of, and we know this, has gone up and up and up, and wages really haven't caught up. They haven't increased much, if at all. How do you see that affecting the tenants whom you organize with?
I mean, it definitely is going to affect the tenants long term. I mean, just systematically, there's a lot that needs to be changed. Like, for instance, the COVID rent relief. Those are programs that are, you know, set by the city and the state. But just systematically, the procedures and processes can take a lot of time. And so you're having people to live in deplorable conditions, having to fight off evictions from their landlords. And so these measures that we're advocating for really are important, because on a day-to-day basis, people are having to struggle with tenant harassment and many different issues. But in terms of wages, I think what we saw on Saturday with the community coming together across multiple unions is what it's going to take and what we're going to start seeing just across the industry. You're going to start seeing people really making a stance and really advocating for themselves. And the most important thing is that the city hears us.
Peter, you've written a bit about the history of how the housing and labor movements intersect. Historically, how have they engaged with one another?
Well, you know, 100 years ago in the early 1900s, it was the labor movement that first put the need for affordable housing on the national agenda. They were the ones that first started the affordable housing by building housing for workers that the unions built themselves. Then during the Depression, they pushed for a federal program to provide affordable public housing for working people and to provide subsidies for homeowners, working class people who wanted to own a home. They really were the backbone of the movement for housing, and tenants groups and housing justice groups over the last 50 years have been fighting a kind of lonely battle. But in the last 5 or 6 years, we've seen this incredible renewal of both tenant organizing and labor organizing. And Los Angeles has been ground zero in that battle. You can see that this summer with all the different unions going on strike and fighting for better wages.
What? Why has it been ground zero? Is it because the cost of living is so high? Why not ground zero in New York or in other very expensive places? Or is that the case as well?
Well, Los Angeles has been the epicenter of the fight. And we've had over 100,000 union members who've gone out on strike, who's saying that the rent is too damn high and the wages are too damn low. Miracle is with SAG-AFTRA, and they think that they're rich, but they're not. We have more actors and actresses, people in the entertainment industry that are homeless, are houseless, just as we do with the hospitality industry. And we understand the tenants' struggle. We have been working with tenants from the Los Angeles County Federation of Labor for the last year that I've been here. Their fight is our fight, and that's the message that we sent on Saturday.
Peter, has that always been the case? You said in L.A., certainly it's fortified in recent years, and you say that it's ground zero. I think we can all agree that it is ground zero. But why, and has it been ground zero in L.A. for a long time historically?
Well, rents have been going up so much faster than wages. You know, the same greed that we see in the hotel industry, in the entertainment industry, we see corporate landlords who've taken over the housing stock in Los Angeles. It's no longer mostly mom and pop landlords. And so they've been raising rents. They've been evicting tenants. They've been violating the rent protection laws. Most of the people that are in unions are renters. They're all feeling the squeeze of higher rents. The more you have to pay in rent, the less you have money for a down payment to buy a home. And so Los Angeles, you've got, as you saw in the Measure ULA campaign to pass the mansion tax last November, you've got the building trades unions that build housing. You've got the hotel workers, the home care workers, the writers. You've got, you know, all the unions working together with the tenants' rights groups and the nonprofit housing developers to push this Measure ULA, which passed with 58% of the vote. And that was such a big success that now those groups are now working together on an ongoing basis.
Miracle and Yvonne, housing and labor have also, though, been sometimes at odds with one another in California, particularly around bills that promote the construction of new housing. In the past, the trades often pushed for construction jobs to be union only, right, in those bills. Is that changing, do you think?
No, not for us, because we believe that the trades is going to build it. They're skilled laborers, and that they should be a part of this whole process. And so we were instrumental in Measure ULA. Remember, it was the building and construction trades, along with the Los Angeles County Federation of Labor, that primarily funded Measure ULA. That's not in conflict with them. In fact, we're working with them in concert for affordable housing.
Is that true, Miracle?
My personal experience as a SAG union member, I know that I've personally applied for affordable housing programs and new builds that were specific to our union. So it really does seem like the city is trying to integrate as many programs as possible and many unions. So I'm not experiencing a conflict. I am seeing dedicated industries and making sure they're being involved.
This isn't just about building new affordable housing, though, right? It's also about allowing people to stay housed, as Yvonne was talking about, as you're talking about, to stop the evictions, to make housing more affordable, make sure that the rents don't go up ad nauseum, you know, to a place where people can't afford to pay the rent. Do you think labor could play a role in that, Yvonne?
Let me just share what we're doing, because we realize that poverty and homelessness. Poverty is the fourth leading cause of death in the country. So the LA Fed, for the first time in history, is hosting a poverty and homelessness summit next week to address the issues of poverty. And we're bringing together the mayor of LA. We're going to lock arms with the mayor of LA, the mayor of Long Beach. Reverend Barber is coming out, and the supervisor, Janice Hahn, to see how we can come together to tackle these problems that we know that exist currently, with not only with our union members, but our community as large.
Peter, you wrote a piece in Shelter Force that examined how this coalition between labor and housing interests could be a big force in politics going forward. Talk a little bit about that, if you wouldn't mind.
you know, renters have always had lower voter registration and voter turnout than homeowners. But if you get the renters and the labor movement together and they do a robust voter registration and voter turnout campaign, they can turn the city upside down. The city council, the city attorney, who's been terrible about housing and tenants' rights issues, they could really make a big difference. So what the county Fed is doing by talking to public officials and the mayor and people on the county board of supervisors is basically saying to them, look, there's a crisis. We need your help in solving it. We need our allies to help work with us. But if you're not going to do it, then we're going to take matters into our own hands, like we did last November and got 58% of the voters in LA to pass this Measure ULA. This coalition of labor and tenants is really potentially enormously powerful. There needs to be a coalition that's thinking long term. What do we need to do over the next 5 years to make sure that we build more housing, but we protect the housing we have, the rental housing that we have, so the tenants don't get evicted, so they can live near where they work? I mean, I know that, you know, every union that I've talked to and done research for, you know, they say that one of the biggest problems is that people live 50, 60, 70 miles, an hour and a half away from their jobs. And that's not good for the business climate. That's not good for the workers and their families. That's unacceptable. The only solution to that is to build more housing and to protect the housing we have to make sure it's affordable.
Peter Dreyer, politics professor from Moxie College. Miracle McKinney, tenant organizer with the Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment, or ACE. And Yvonne Wheeler, president of the LA Federation of Labor. Thanks to you all for coming on and being with us today. We appreciate it. And we'll continue to talk about this for sure for a long time.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Still ahead, art with the colors and textures, the sights and the sounds of the City of Angels, a return of the biennial called Made in LA, and some of the works you'll see as it goes on. That's as we go on with Greater LA after this short break.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Moving on now with Greater LA from KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Every other year at the Hammer Museum in Westwood, they put on a show that shows LA. The biennial Made in LA is back in 2023 with 39 artists representing some of the best art being made in Los Angeles. And last week, our Greater LA producers, Juliana Mayo and Zoe Matthew, headed over to the Hammer to take it all in. And they're with us today, right now, in studio to talk about what they saw. Zoe, Juliana, welcome to you both.
Howdy, Steve.
All right, in stereo. So so Made in LA is all about finding the best work being made in LA. But this city is full of artists. We talk about art all the time. How did they find folks and then narrow it down?
Well, we talked to the curators, Diana Nawi and Pablo Jose Ramirez, about that. She is an independent curator, and Pablo is a Hammer curator. I guess they always pair kind of one outsider with an insider for these shows. So he was living at Berlin when all this started, and she had been in LA for a good long while. It was kind of like a forced marriage, but they seemed to really dig each other, to be fair. Don't you think, Zoe?
Yeah, definitely. And I got to give Pablo some shout outs because he did most of the driving to more than 200 studio visits that they made to select these artists. And they finally whittled it down to 39 after that process. Here's Diana talking a little bit about how that shaped the perspective of the show.
We think of the show not just as a selection of artists that we saw, but as a lens back out onto the city. So I think it's very much meant to be a lens back out onto the city as much as it is meant to be a kind of snapshot in and of itself.
And then they also narrowed it down by choosing a theme.
A theme? Like, isn't the theme made in L.A.?
No, actually, they choose a specific theme each time they do this exhibition. So this year, the title of the show was Acts of Living, and they gave us a little insight into how they chose it. It was during Pablo's very first visit to the iconic Watts Towers.
There's a quote inscribed on a plaque at Watts Towers from Noah Purifoy, who's an incredibly important artist who's working in L.A., and it says, "One does not have to be a visual artist to utilize creativity. Creativity can be an act of living, a way of life, and a formula for doing the right thing." And I think for us, that was a sentiment that resonated not only with how we were working, but what we were seeing in all these artist studios.
So this exhibition really aims, I think, to expand the idea of what counts as quote unquote fine art, right? Like the curator said, it was less about this academic idea and more about a feeling and just creating a transformative experience for visitors.
So there was a wide variety of work then.
Oh, yes. There was everything from more traditional painting to sculpture, drawings made with kind of non-traditional materials. There were ceramics and these like bedazzled bodies. And there was even a driving tour of the valley that you could enter a raffle to go on with the artist.
And do not even worry about it, Steve. We talked to them about getting you in on the mix.
I would love that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there was performance art, too, which I was impressed by because it can be really hard to kind of pull off performance in an exhibition like this.
Yeah. I mean, performance art. Tell us about that. I mean, what do they do? How do they do it? Is the artist going to be there every day performing?
She's not going to be there every day. She'll be performing once a week. Her name's Roxana Peruzmand, and her work kind of dealt with the experience of living in two worlds as an Iranian immigrant.
Yeah, she was in this, like, small room kind of sandwiched between the gallery walls, almost like she was a piece of framed art. And inside the room, there was, like, this really strong fan blowing as she was going through these family photos and letters. And there were mementos hung up from her home in Iran all around her, like some of her grandma's dresses. She was kind of rifling through these photos and she would catch them as they blew by and kind of take them in. It was really emotional. You look into the piece through two windows, depending on which side of the wall you're on. So she said, when we spoke to her, that one of them was a replica of a window from her home in Iran. And then one of them kind of looked like a window from her home here that she lives in with her family in LA.
Also, I was thinking like how the viewer from one side, if one room turned into a room from Iran and one room turned into a room from here, then you are being seen from both sides and like with the background of the other side. So I'm imagining like, I don't know, any immigrant maybe coming would have that kind of experience.
Wow, that really sounds like, you know, personal space for her. And you said something earlier about unconventional drawing, right, Zoe?
Yeah, there were all kinds of really interesting, unconventional drawings. And one of our favorite pieces was the work of this artist, Jackie Amezquita. She does these really cool etchings in this special mixture she makes from soil, masa, salt, and limestone. They're of these everyday scenes and memories from the two decades she's lived here in L.A. since she moved from Guatemala in 2003.
So these are like memories from bus stops, and just thinking about when I used to go and wait for the 154 bus in San Fernando Valley and take it to work when I used to work as a nanny. There's also like drawings of food vendors. There's drawings of my nanny friends with the kids. There's also drawings of like the kids that I used to nanny. Also my family eating tacos at the taco truck, and how, you know, these memories and these drawings are like part of our life in Los Angeles and how I have integrated into the landscape.
Speaking of integrating into the landscape, all of the soil that she used for this came from like 46 different sites across LA, which is kind of cool. So she's mixed all of the soil from all around the city and like found all these interesting things in it too.
Going through that soil, she kind of talked about like the memory of the soil itself and how she found all these little pieces of, you know, plastic and trash that kind of showed the lifespan of this soil and everything that had transpired there. It was really cool.
I spend most of my life undocumented, and the work in Made in LA, it's inspired by this 20 years of living in Los Angeles and thinking about traces, but also thinking about erasure and also what the land has witnessed and what would it be if, you know, the soil can speak. What would it say? What would the land say to us? Because the land has witnessed amazing things, but also we have, you know, a history of erasure in Los Angeles.
The land has witnessed amazing things. That is really cool when she talks about, you know, bringing all of that together. Of course, this being LA, talking about being together, we're all together on the freeways too, because it's such a car-centric city and region. There had to be some art involving cars, right?
Oh, yes. There was one artist, Dominique Moody, who we talked to, whose work involved both cars and housing, two of LA's favorite topics.
She's this assemblage artist who's really dedicated to this idea of nomadic living and something really powerful that happened. She's been working on this project for years, right? Building this custom mobile home that she hauls behind this beautiful, like, 1940s truck. And in the process of building this thing out, she discovered that her family had come from a nomadic tribe in West Africa. So she found out that this, like, natural drive that she had to be nomadic was actually something that was in her blood. It was really fascinating.
Yeah, and so the piece itself is actually a mobile home that she handcrafted every part of it herself. And it's parked right outside the Hammer Museum on the street, and you can kind of tour it. It's really lovely. It has everything from a porch, which, you know, it just gives it such a welcoming feeling to me. A porch is kind of, you know, such a symbol of coming together. It has this little seating area, a kitchen filled with mason jars of lentils and beans. It's really a pleasant space to be in.
The whole idea is that the ordinary becomes extraordinary and that the simple pleasures in life are the quality.
And before this, she spent a lot of time traveling around in this home she made, spending nights in different parts of LA and meeting all the people there. But she actually mentioned that things like parking restrictions made that difficult, which is a struggle that a lot of unhoused people in LA know all too well.
I'm hoping that when people see this, that there will be more openness about different ways that we can be, that we can live, and that quality of life does not have to mean a single one thing, and that we can meet those needs in a very affordable, accessible way.
The piece is going to be at the Hammer every day of the exhibition, but Dominique herself will only be there on Sunday. So if you want to see inside this truly beautiful tiny home and spend some time with her, as you can hear, she's so thoughtful. Make sure you go on a Sunday.
On a Sunday. All of this, there is just so much. Who is Made in LA trying to speak to? Are we talking about everybody?
I mean, Diana was quick to point out that the Hammer's free, so she does hope that everyone in LA is going to come through. And here's what Pablo had to say.
Well, we hope the audience is everyone. And I guess we will feel accomplished to an extent if people visiting the show see themselves reflected on the show. Probably they would glimpse histories of their own community, their own families. That's all about in the end, like being able to feel things when you see a show. And hopefully we're doing that.
Well, it goes on through the end of the year. If everyone wants to go, and that includes you, if you're listening, the Hammer Museum on Wilshire Boulevard, Wilshire and Westwood Boulevards in West LA. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthew, producers, sometimes roving reporters too, together in this instance, talking about Made in LA. Thanks to you both for coming on.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, that's all the time we have for today. Tomorrow, new zoning rules will likely increase the population of one tiny LA County town exponentially. A visit to this weird city and a look at its past and future tomorrow, right here on GLA. Check us out online anytime at kcrw.com/GLA. And while you're at the website, tell us how you're doing, share a story idea you might have, and grab the podcast too. We'd love to be in your lineup. You can get the podcast wherever you get your podcast, by the way. Search KCRW, Greater LA. Juliana Mayo, Zoe Matthews, Celine Mendiola, Ted Robbins, Phil Richards, Amy Ta, Carlos Ramirez, Mike Vogel, Eben Ray, and Christian Bordahl all helped piece this evening's episode together. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for the year. Have a great night.